What up, Canes fans? Before we get started, just wanted to talk to you guys about the Tank Brewery real quick. The Tank is located in the heart of Miami in Dade County at 5100 Northwest 72nd Avenue. This place is awesome. I've been there. The beer is outstanding. The food is great. Whether you're watching the Canes game, the Heat game there with your buddies, you're having a guys' night out, or you're having a date night with the missus, it's a great place to hang out. So you can order online at thetankbrewingtakeout.com or call them at 786-801-1554 for delivery or pickup. And here's the thing. If you use the promo code TANK4SUP, you will get free delivery on game days. And so that is TANK4SUP, the number four. Not spell it out, but TANK4SUP. So go check out our friends at the Tank Brewing. They've been great to us. So take it away, Jordan.
All right. Also, we want you guys to check out our guy, Stickers by AB. That's at STICKERZ by AB. You know, I've been ordering a bunch of stuff from him. You know, we have a collaboration sticker that has our logo on it. So make sure you're checking him out. Give him a follow on Twitter. He's just a good dude, and he's helping us design our merch. So yeah, man, it's make sure you're supporting the good people that help us out here on Fours Up.
You're listening to the Fours Up podcast with your host, Marsh.
All right, what up, what up, what up, Canes fans? It is the Fours Up podcast presented by the Tank Brewery. It is Friday, October 23rd. It is UVA Eve. As always, I am joined by my wonderful producer and co-host, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, what's up, brother?
Nothing much, man. Just I started Blue Mountain State over again. You inspired me, and my girlfriend loves it. So it's like, can't ask for more than that, right?
That's all you need in life. And we're also joined by our guest for the evening. It is Mr. Eric Robinson. He covers the Falcons for the Falcoholic. I mean, he writes for a few different sites. Eric, what's going on, man?
Nothing much. I'm kind of ready to get things going tomorrow night, man, with our Canes.
Absolutely. And we'll get into that a little bit. But Jordan, what do we have to go through before we get to the football?
Yeah, so I just wanted to remind everyone that y'all should go to Stickers by AB. You know, he's a friend of the podcast. He's designing some of our merch. He's been on the show, and you know, he's become a personal friend. So he has a discount code. It's Fours Up. It's the number four and then SUP, and that will get you 15% off in all of his stickers that are Miami Hurricanes related. And we actually have a crossover sticker with him. So I know I've been buying a whole bunch. I'm sitting at my desk right now and have a big stack of probably almost 30 stickers. So make sure you guys are checking out Stickers by AB.
Absolutely. Okay. So the Canes were 4-1, got Virginia tomorrow night with Bronco Mendenhall, Jordan's boy. Eric, guys, so here's a little backstory for you, Eric, and the listeners who don't know. So Jordan and I both live in Utah. We're both Canes fans. I grew up in South Florida, but we moved to Utah. And Jordan, can I say your second team is BYU?
I mean, I don't know if I would say that, but like all of my very close friends are BYU fans. So kind of.
Okay.
So there's a man crush there with Mendenhall, is basically what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I've heard some good stories. You know, I've had close friends that interacted with him, and you know, like, one of my very closest friends, like, he had a life changing experience with Bronco that he just seems like a good dude. So yes, yeah. I do not slander Bronco Mendenhall, as goofy as he might be.
But meanwhile, me on the other hand, my second team, you know, I cheer for the University of Utah Utes, and they're huge rivals with BYU, so I hate Bronco Mendenhall.
Yeah, I see how you guys got this going right now. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So big game tomorrow. And then we have a bye week next week, unfortunately. Eric, I wanted to ask you first, are you from Florida? Because I know you're a Canes fan. Like, did you grow up in Florida, or how did that
work? Actually, I'm born and raised in Columbia, South Carolina. I lived in Florida for a handful of years in the military, in the Air Force, United States Air Force. But I've been a Canes fan since a kid. So, you know, everybody that was growing up around me, you know, that grew up around me were either Gamecocks or Tigers fans. And I was the only oddball that was a Miami
fan. So love it, man.
That's just it stuck with me.
Yeah. And thank you for your service in the military. Yeah. And I can relate to that, though, man, because I grew up, you know, it's only been the last few years that I started to like cheer for BYU because, you know, growing up, I born and raised here in Salt Lake. And I've been a diehard Cane since I was young. Dude, like, I know how it feels to, you know, to be an outsider, right? Yeah. When it comes to the football team. So I can relate to that.
Definitely.
Okay, so, I mean, so the Canes are 4-1 and we're ranked 11th right now, Eric. How what are your feelings towards the season at this point?
You know, I keep, as the season goes on, I keep resonating back to the 2017 season when they were ranked high and they were winning games, but you still kind of felt a little uneven about the team as they were winning games. But I don't have that feeling now. I do feel like this is the turning of the tide a little bit.
Okay. So you're buying into the hype then?
I am. I'm buying into the hype slowly. This is definitely like I said, a turning of the chapter for the Canes. Getting a guy like Rhett Lashley in, you can see what he's doing to this team. You can see what he's doing to the offense. You can see the confidence in the team. I just don't have those 2017 vibes. Like, I never really bought fully in. Even when they were third in or number two overall, I never really bought into it. Like, they don't feel like that.
I mean, that team, it was exciting. But you never really you knew, everybody knew that number two ranking was not legit.
Right.
But it was a fun year. But I do get that feeling, and I'm buying into the hype as well. But I want to warn Canes fans, and I don't know if you agree with this. You were hinting towards it, you know, turning the chapter and everything like that. This year is the start, but it doesn't mean it's going to end up beating Clemson in Charlotte or anything like that.
No, but this is so vital. This year is so vital for this program because it can either lead to a catastrophic recruiting outcome or it can be the benchmark for what is, you know, years of winning. So this year is critical. I mean, I never, even going back to that Clemson game, you know, a few weeks back, I never really, if they won, great. I'm cool with it. But if they were just make it competitive, it would have went a long way towards you know, just the outlook of the program.
I agree 100% with what you're saying. And I want to point out some positive trends that we should all be feeling great about. Right. The first one is the culture of the team is changing. You're seeing that mostly through the guys like Bubba Bolden and Jalen Phillips and De'Eriq King, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a little more complex because none of those guys were recruited here.
Right.
However, Manny has talked a lot about that. You know, he's talked about the character he wants in the locker room. He said that, you know, last season he said this upcoming recruiting class, which is our current true freshman, he said all these guys have that attitude, right? So at least Manny is identifying it and he's trying to bring it into the program. Mm-hmm. I think with the true freshman, it remains to be seen. You know, how they do, but I think for the most part it looks great, right? I mean Corey Flagg, you know, like we have a lot of impact freshmen right now, you know, at wide receiver, at linebacker, you know, Tyler Van Dyke is doing great things, you know, well, on Green Tree, supposedly. Yeah. And then the two running backs, Chaney and Knighton. So
yeah.
I think you're right in saying that this is the turning of the tide. And I think that is the one thing that I look to that is really good evidence. Is that we are changing the culture of the locker room. I hope that it's happening with guys that we recruit and not just transfer portal guys.
Let me ask you guys this. With the changing of that attitude of the program, that swagger, is it more credited to the coaching hires or is it more credited to getting Ed Reed in that locker room and on that sideline and around that team?
You know, Marsh, do you care if I go first?
No, go ahead.
I'm actually going to give all the credit to Manny. I'm giving 100% of the credit to Manny.
Okay.
And here's why. Not that I don't think Ed Reed's going to help, because he will. However, Bubba and Jalen were brought in before Ed Reed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, obviously Manny made some mistakes last year. Tate Martell didn't work out. Dan Enos didn't work out. But it looks as if he's learned from those mistakes, though. Yes. And I'm pretty sure Rhett Lashley was hired before Ed Reed as well. Yeah, and so that was a great move as well. So I think Ed Reed, his hiring is an extension of what Manny is doing correctly.
Okay.
So, he, you know, Ed Reed's going to help snowball whatever Manny has going. But I think it started well before Ed Reed got to campus. Mm-hmm. So I'm giving the credit to Manny here, as much as I love the Ed Reed thing.
Okay.
You know, I you know, I'm pretty similar to Jordan. Ed, the hiring of Ed Reed just puts a championship and veteran twist into everything. It kind of, it's just like a bonus. The job that Manny Diaz has done, you know, post last year's bowl game has been absolutely tremendous. I think he did a great job with not only Rhett Lashley, but you know, the offensive line coach, Garen Justice, and then Rob Likens. And then obviously bringing in a guy like Ed Reed. And I wasn't the biggest fan of that move when it was made. I thought it was a publicity stunt, and, you know, because he's Ed Reed. I didn't think he was going to be there.
Right.
But he has, I mean, he's on the sideline every single game. He's at practice. So I think Manny is deserves almost all the credit. I mean, this is his team. But Ed Reed just takes everything and then gives it just that Hall of Fame kind of fist bump.
Right. So can I share a story about this real quick?
Yeah.
So I also do, you know, with Derek Coe, you guys all know Derek Coe. So with him, we do a radio show on Slam Radio. And from the UAB game, he shared an anecdote with me about the type of impact that Ed Reed has when he's on the sidelines. So he said that there was a player, you know, that just, I don't want to say names or anything, but there was a player on the sidelines that had wanted playing time, you know, thought he was going to be in the starting lineup. He didn't. And, you know, he looked downtrodden during the game. That's what Derek was telling me, because he was sitting like front row or something. So he's like, this guy is trying to get in the game all game. You know, he doesn't get that many reps. And like 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter, like, you can see that mentally he's packing it in. You know, he's taking the tape off of his hands and his gloves and stuff. And, you know, like, he's getting ready to go to the locker room. And he said that you could see Ed Reed, like, looking at him, you know, watching this kid take, you know, start to get ready to go into the locker room when there's still 9 minutes left in the game. And he walks over and taps, I can't remember which coach, you know, whether it was Lashley or the position coach or Manny or whoever. And whispers something in his ear, and then that dude's in the game for the rest, you know, for the rest of the game, like trying to teach him a lesson, like don't pack it in before the gun goes off, you know, like you got to stay ready. So, like it's stuff like that that I didn't expect that from Ed Reed either. And this is to Marsh's point, but I think it's the small things like that that Ed Reed is able to teach lessons. You know, we saw him go over to D. Wiggins and tell him to keep his head up after some. I think it was during the Clemson game when he didn't fight for that ball in the end zone and got picked off.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the stuff like that is going to make huge changes in the program.
The influence that he had in the Louisville game as well. Yeah. He got a late hit call?
Uh-huh. Yes.
In the second half, just for him kind of whispering in the referee's ear. And again, that's just having, if that was some unknown Miami assistant, that ref would have said, all right, leave me alone. I'm trying to concentrate the game. But the fact that it was Ed Reed in his ear, the very next play was a call on the Louisville defender. Like, that's just the influence of having a guy like that on the sideline. I think that's huge. It's almost like having an extra coach.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love that Manny Diaz, because obviously he was trying to fix all the holes that were there last year. You know, the obviously the offense gave us all, you know, made us all insane. But but one of the roles that he filled was, you know, one that wasn't even created last year at the University of Miami. And but he and the board of trustees, you know, they came up and made the decision that that's the kind of position that will not just make Miami a 9-win team this year and then fall off again, but it's going to a move that'll make sure that the culture is continuing to grow.
Bring a little more prestige back to the program, and credit Ed Reed for even wanting to do it. Cause you know, a lot of guys in his stature, you know, with the Hall of Famer may say, hey, I'm too good for that to be back on the college sidelines. You know, he's already, you know, went through the reins of being an NFL assistant. So a tip of him there for wanting to even, you know, take on that role.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this question. Why do you think Miami's alumni, you know, their former players, why do you think they are tied closer to their school than maybe some other, you know, because it's well known that Miami has a very distinct, but also what's the word I'm trying to say? They're very close to their former players. Why do you think it's more so like that at Miami compared to other schools?
Well, I think that's something that's been, you know, pretty much planted in the seeds going back to the 80s.
Yeah.
And, you know, and of course, someone may hear this and think that it may be a little bit biased, but I honestly don't see that kind of close knit from the alumni at any other program. I really don't see it at Alabama.
Yep.
I don't really see it at USC or Penn State or Michigan. It's really at Miami. It's only at Miami where you see guys like Michael Irvin and Warren Sapp at a UAB game because they're there. And I think that I also believe that the players feel that the program needs it at this point in time because of what they've been going through the past decade plus. Like, hey, they need that alumni to come back and say, hey, this is still Miami, because of course a lot of people are building their own, you know, outlook on Miami, because a lot of kids that come into college football now, they were not there when Warren Sapp was playing. They were not there. They were not even born when Ray Lewis was there, or even when Ed Reed was playing. They were toddlers. So I think the players, the alumni still believe like, hey, we still need to help out the university by building the university to what we know it is. And that's why you still see them there to this day.
Yeah. Well, I want to make a comparison of this offseason between us and Florida State. You see Ed Reed, you know, come in as the what's his title again? I can't think of it right now. I'm drawing a blank.
Chief of Affairs or
Chief of Staff.
Chief of Staff.
Yeah. So he comes in as the Chief of Staff. I mean, it was a big headline when it happened, but if you think his role hasn't been glamorous, you know, it's not like what he's doing is extremely glamorous right now.
I don't know what the hell is Chief of Staff anyway.
I mean, he's putting in work, in my opinion. Like I think he's doing dirty work because he loves the program, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's not a sideline coach. He's not furthering a coaching career, which we know he's interested in because he was with Buffalo Bills last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like this is a huge boon to his career. But if you contrast that with what happened with Deion Sanders at Florida State, like he threw his hat in the ring to be head coach. And when they spurned him, he went somewhere else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Ed Reed is willing to put in, you know, he's willing to get his hands dirty and, you know, like have a very unglamorous position to help fix the culture at the University of Miami, whereas Deion just wanted the lights, right?
Right. And to be honest with you, this may lead to a front office job for Ed Reed down the line.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. That's a good point. So, I mean, maybe that point isn't as strong, but I do think that's the difference, though, is Ed was willing to do whatever he had to do to make the University of Miami better, whereas Deion kind of just, you know, he was Deion, right?
Yeah, and I don't see those guys at Florida State games. I don't see those guys, you know, if an Alabama alumni, they come to a game, more than likely it's either the Auburn game or the LSU game.
Yeah.
They're not there against Chattanooga State or whatever. They're there for the headline games. And like I said, you don't see that unless it's at Miami. Those guys are there all the time, man.
It's pretty amazing because, you know, I've gone and covered a ton of practices, and more often than not, on more like at least one occasion a week, you know, you're going to have at least some former players. It may not be a Hall of Famer, but right. I mean, you'll get a lot of guys. Greg Olson sometimes stops by, and all these guys, and just having that influence and that, you know, that feeling the love that they have for their alma mater. I'm sure it's a huge deal for Miami.
And don't downplay it, okay? Those kids that play in that Miami local area, they may not have been around to see Ed Reed or Andre Johnson or you know, even Sean Taylor when they were at their height of, at the University of Miami, but they know who those names are. They know who Ed Reed is. They know who Warren Sapp is. Just playing in that Miami area, you may not see him, but you know that still carries. So yeah, those guys, I'm pretty sure those kids, their eyes widen when they see a guy like, you know, Michael Irvin walking out of the room or something like that.
Well, a trend that I've noticed, and maybe it's kind of tailing off now, but for the longest time, it seems like most of these kids that grow up, like the biggest recruits in Florida, they grow up as Miami Hurricanes fans.
Right.
However, and that's because of the brand, right? Like, what's not to love about it? Like, you can see that brotherhood from a mile away. That's why I'm a Miami Hurricanes fan.
Right.
Is because I loved watching all the players meet up after the NFL games in the, you know, on the logo to talk about being Hurricanes, right? That's what, like, really drew me into the program.
Yeah. And that was also weird, too. All these five-star, four-star local Florida products are Miami fans, but they leave and go to Alabama.
Yeah, and that's why we just, like, if we can just make it a smart business decision for these kids to attend University of Miami, the recruiting will take care of itself.
It will. Because,
really, I don't blame them. I mean, you know, for the last 15 years, why would you go to Miami? Like, if you're Julio Jones, why would you go to Miami over Alabama? Or if you're Jerry Jeudy, or if you're, you know,
we could name these players for hours. Dalvin Cook.
Exactly. Like, what's the point though? You got, like, these kids got to make a good business decision, and yeah, they can get noticed at University of Miami as well, but like, we haven't been even in the conversation to compete for a national title since what, 2005?
Can I ask a question to both you guys? Eric, let me ask you first. How different do you think Mark Pope's career would have been if he would have went to a place like Alabama?
Ooh.
Or Jeff Thomas.
Oh, wow. Jeez. You know what? I'll be honest with you. A guy like Jeff Thomas, I don't think he would have lasted long at Alabama.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think Saban would have gotten rid of him, you know, probably year one somehow.
Yeah, you get one chance at Alabama.
You got one chance. He got numerous chances at Miami because, of course, to be honest with you, he probably was the best player on the field at certain times. Definitely the best receiver in the room, maybe. But I think if he would have went to a school like Alabama or Georgia, he wouldn't have lasted. As far as Pope goes, I really like Pope a lot coming out of high school. Love his skill set now. I also believe he'll still be sitting right now if he went to Alabama. You can't sit here and tell me, honestly, you can't sit here and tell me he would have started over Jerry Jeudy last year. Or he would have got more playing time than Henry Ruggs.
Or Jalen Waddle,
Like this year, he's going to be starting over Waddle and Devontae Smith.
No, I'm sorry. And like I said, I love Mark Pope. I love his skill set. I love what he brings to the table. I love the fact that he stayed home. But if he would have went to schools like that, man, he would have been a four-year reserve, to be honest with you.
Well, I saw that tweet on the timeline a few days ago, and I really, because I have the same thought as you do. A lot of these people are saying, oh, if you put him in the right system, and I want to tell them, like, it's not just the system with some of these guys. You can't I think a lot of people, and you know, I'm very guilty of this. I thought that this offense would make D. Wiggins and Mike Harley, you know, 50, 60 catch guys and 800,000 yard receivers. And it's just because I thought it was the system. And it's not.
I thought it would have made Pope that type of receiver simply because it would allowed him to be kind of sort of like what the James Prochet was to SMU.
Yeah.
Just dialed up plays just to get him in one-on-one matchups and use him in space.
Yeah.
I think what happened was I think Lashley saw the run game take off a little bit more than he expected it to, and he said, hey, we got something here.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finally figured out and said, hey, you know what? Our best receiver is probably our tight end. So why don't we utilize the run to set up and elevate our passing game? Because we really don't have the guys at receiver. So I think that's probably what it is. And that's there's nothing wrong with that, to be honest with you. It's just it's him seeing what's in front of him and him adapting to it. Something that Dan Enos didn't do. Something that Mark rarely did, honestly. So I'm fine with it, honestly.
Yeah. You know, I was laughing to myself on Sunday because, you know, Marsh and I have spent all offseason talking about the Rhett Lashley hire. We're like, you know, our wide receivers are going to be great. You know, I personally predicted that D. Wiggins would go near or over 1,000 yards. You know, because we were saying, like, there's no way that SMU's wide receivers are that much better than our guys. And then I was watching the Ravens-Eagles and saw James Prochet playing for the Ravens. And I was like, you know what? He was just that much better than all of our guys. So, I mean, you know, I'm not going to fault any Canes fans for thinking that because I did too. But I guess it's just kind of funny. Like, I guess Lashley just had better personnel than our current wide receiving core last season. So
reality kind of set in a little bit. Probably in the Clemson game.
Honestly. Yeah.
The Clemson game was like, okay, these guys are really not as good as we thought they were. They're good. Don't get me wrong. They're good. But they're not
elite.
They're not elite. There's no number one receiver here. Like I mentioned, Brevin Jordan is probably the best weapon in the passing game for him.
Yeah.
Which I'm okay with because of the fact that you have Brevin, you have the option. What other schools have the option of having literally two number one tight ends on the field at the same time?
Yeah, it's amazing.
That is what's key. That and having a run game that can really get you 200 yards if you really stick with it. To me, they can slide by this year without having an elite number one receiver, in my opinion. Just to get nine, maybe ten wins, they can get by.
And I think that nine wins without a number one receiver is very obtainable because we're putting up points and we're making it work without having a guy like that. Let me ask you this. What has been the most what has surprised you the most in a good way about the Hurricanes this year? And then also what has been the most disappointing?
The fact that Lashley is not afraid to lean on that run game and to go deep in a depth chart with it. He's got three number one backs.
Yeah.
He's got Cam, he's got Knighton, he's got Chaney, and he's not afraid to use any of them. And that is what I like. You know, Cam Harris is a great back. He can definitely start in a number of programs, but I didn't want to see them, you know, run him into the ground. Keep that rotation going. Keep that thing fresh. You can't sit here and tell me that it hasn't worked when Chaney is pulling off 5-6 yard carries in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. So
it's working. Keep that. Yeah. Go ahead.
And you know, Robert Burns is played great. I mean, even into last season, he got a lot more run when Enos was here.
Right.
But you know, Robert Burns got a number of carries against Pitt and he's been good too. I mean, I'd have a hard time believing that Robert Burns wouldn't at least be number two on the depth chart at Florida right now. So
And not our old running back who transferred to Florida.
Yeah.
How's he doing? Yeah.
I think that's a thing where it's not just the system.
Right. Haven't heard much from him since he left. But yeah. The scheme is versatile enough to the point where you can rely on the run game to set up the pass. A lot of people will look at this scheme and say, oh, is all about throwing the ball 40, 50 times a game? Not necessarily. It's all about getting the right players in the right space at the right time and making the defense not anticipate what's coming. So what Lashley has in front of him right now, he says, I have a deep running game that can get me 4, 5, 6 yards a carry when I need to. I have a running back that can, I have a quarterback that can pull it in and tuck it and run when I need to. I don't necessarily need Derek King to throw the ball 40 times a game. And he's adjusting to it. And again, I'm fine with that. That works when you have Brevin running seam routes by his damn self. That I appreciate, because that run game sets all that up.
Yeah, so I have a question for both of you. Marsh, I want you to answer this as well. So if you had to pick, and you have to pick, what concerns you more? Is it the fact that our offense relies on chunk plays? Because, I mean, as we talked to Parker last week, he's an analytic stats guy, you know, he showed that our offense really isn't more efficient on a down-to-down basis than last season or the year before, but we get more chunk plays. We're getting more plays that are 20-plus yards, which is, you know, increasing our overall production. But, you know, on a down-to-down basis, we're really not that much more efficient. However, I mean, it's clear that we're better. So does that concern you more, or does the bend don't break defense concern you more?
Who wants to, you guys want me to go first with that one, or?
Yeah, guest always goes first.
I'm going to lean towards the offense with this one. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to add a little bit more to it. The fact that they're relying on the chunk plays is somewhat of a concern. But what is also a equal concern for me is, and again, I don't want to harp on these kids, man. These guys are kids, and they're doing what they can out there on the field. But not only can the receivers not separate, but they can't make contested catches.
Yeah,
that concerns me. I can live with one. You know, you've seen the big receivers that can't separate, but if it's a 50-50 ball, it's going to be 70-30 when it's up in the air, because he'll get it. These guys can't separate, and they can't make contested catches. They need a lot of setting up to make plays as receivers, and that concerns me a little bit. The defense, I'm not really worried about, because those guys, they're going to fly around. They're going to make plays. As long as that defensive line is making tackles for loss and sacks, they're going to make turnovers. They're going to be fine. I really don't care about their numbers. They're going to be all right. But as long as that pass rush continues to come, they're going to win games. That's all that matters to me. So the offensive side of the ball, that –
Yeah. So Jordan, your question was, what are you more worried about, or?
Yeah. Which concerns you more? Is it the fact that we're relying on chunk plays, or is it the bend don't break defense?
I'm going to have to agree with Eric and talk and say the wide receivers. I mean, I've said it on this podcast 100 times. I don't worry actually worry too much about a Manny Diaz defense. You know, I know that we couldn't stop Clemson, but for the teams that we're playing right now, this defense can get us to 9-10 wins. I think our defense is getting better as well. Nesta is really playing well. Quincy Roche is playing that, like, he could be a first round draft pick. Bubba Bolden is emerging, things like that. And the receivers, there's not really an excuse anymore. I mean, Pope, Wiggins, and Harley have been here for 3-4 years. If you can't produce at all as a senior or a junior when you were expected to be like the guys, then we got a bigger problem. If you're in the middle of the season and your head coach has to say, all right, we're changing things up, we're having a wide receiver competition this week, whoever is the best is going to start, and the other guys are true freshmen.
that ain't good.
I mean, that's my answer. I'm not really too concerned about the defense, considering the teams we're playing on the rest of the schedule.
The key takeaway I took from the Pitt game, I didn't care about the total yards. They had 5 red zone trips, and they gave up 1 touchdown. That's all that matters.
I agree, and you know, I guess my take from early on in the season is, like, is that sustainable? You know, I've harped on the bend don't break. So I'm like, man, I'm really worried that one game that's going to bite us really hard. You know, there's going to be a day that they just break consistently. And that's kind of what happened against Clemson for the most part. But, you know, that's kind of expected, right? Like, I'm not going to be upset about that. That's what should have happened. If you go just by the spread and whatever. But I am worried about that against teams like Virginia Tech and UNC. However, I do want to point out how big of a shot in the arm guys like Jared Harrison Hunt have been. Mm-hmm. You know, I complained a lot about how soft our run defense was between the linebackers and the interior defensive line. But I mean, I feel like the more that Harrison Hunt is on the field, the less that's a problem. I mean, that's kind of what we've seen in the last 2 weeks. Yeah. And I'm hoping that's a trend that sticks.
Yeah.
You know, so if Corey Flagg and Sam Brooks and Jared Harrison Hunt can really solidify the middle of the field for us, our defense won't have any problems. I mean, and, you know, DJ Ivy and Takori Couch have really stepped up in the last few weeks. So if our defense continues to get better, really there's not many holes. We just had to mess around with the personnel a little bit. There were some dudes that were not pulling their weight.
And like I said, the bend don't break thing with this defense, you know, it's against certain teams, you can get away with it. Against a team like Pitt, you can get away with it. You can give up 360 yards or whatever. But like I said, they have 5 red zone trips and they give up 1 touchdown. That is phenomenal. But as long as the pass rush is flowing, which it is, which it can be, Jalen Phillips has proven to be unblockable at times. Yeah. As long as that pass rush is flowing and they're able to generate red zone stops, they're going to win some games. They're going to be involved. And that is what – and, you know, go back to that Clemson game, man. Clemson wasn't really gashing them with the big plays until the second half when it looked like it was getting out. A lot of the Clemson drives were long drives, 9, 10, 11 play drives. So they made Clemson work a little bit. And if you go to that first drive of the game, man, they could have had a game-turning pick with Roche if he did it on both sides. But they made Clemson work in the first half. That's probably one of the takeaways I took from that. So
I like that because not a lot of people are talking about that. And that Roche play, I think that like changed everything. That kind of took the wind out of us. It was on the first drive. One of my last questions for you. I know Jordan wanted to ask you a few NFL things. So I saw that you write for the Scouting Academy, correct?
Well, I took the Scouting Academy course back in 2017.
Okay, because I was going to ask you if you're like some NFL draft, you know, if you're into that stuff, and I was going to ask you about some of the...
I still do NFL draft work for the Falcoholic, for Tackler Media as well that I'm with now. I did have a 2-year stint with Fox Sports that I was doing NFL draft work as well. So that was just me learning the game a little bit better for those 2 months, and I learned a lot. I don't know if you guys even thought about taking it, but... Guys, Louis Riddick, one of the instructors, former Rams head coach Mike Martz was another instructor as well.
Wow.
Jerry Angelo, former Bears GM, was another instructor. You can really learn the game of football in and out, and it really expanded the game for me. So,
I'm going to have to DM you about that, man.
It's worth it.
Okay, so since you know a little bit about the NFL draft, let me ask you the names of 3 or 4 Canes, and when I like you tell me if you think they're going to leave early or come back for next year. Okay, we'll start off with Bubba Bolden.
Oh no, that's bad.
I want him to come back, but I think he's going to have enough people in his ear for him to leave.
Yeah,
he's playing really well right now.
He is. Okay, what about Jalen Phillips?
He's gone.
Really?
He's gone.
Oh, God. Okay.
I think right now he's getting second round talk, and a lot of that can also depend on combine workouts, which I think he's going to tear up.
Yeah.
He's good as gone.
Jalen is – you could just see him and watch him play. You could tell that he would kill the combine.
He's a freak.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, if he's getting the second round grade before the combine and then he kills the combine, like, we could have three ends go in the first round. That'd be incredible.
Yeah.
Well, it's just crazy because I was talking about it on the last episode. Greg Rousseau was able to, you know, opt out and he's going to go into the draft. He'll most likely be probably a top 15 pick, but that's because he had that one really great year of film. Do you think it's a concern that Bubba Bolden and Jalen Phillips, they're going to have a really good year of film, but it's probably not up to Rousseau's level because that was like one of the best seasons we've seen out of a Miami single player in a long time. Do you think that's a concern with Bubba and Jalen going, you know, in the first or second round?
No, because I think when it comes to those draft grades, especially what you see now from Rousseau, I think a lot of it also is based on, you know, their anticipation of how they're going to test. Those combine tests are going to be, you know, they're going to be under the microscope. And, you know, you see it on the film. There are some things Rousseau needs to work on. But when it comes to him being in T-shirt and tights, he's going to look pretty good. Same with Jalen Phillips. Yeah. He's going to tear it up. And I think when they do that and they have those workouts and they look great, they're good as gone, man. Like, these guys, I think Bubba has a chance to come back. But with Phillips being a pass rusher, right now he's getting pre-draft rankings like in the 60s, which is late second round. So that's with only a handful of game tape and not even a workout. So,
okay, last guy I'm going to ask you about is De'Aaron King.
I can see Derek coming back.
Yeah, I'm torn.
I can see him coming back. I can see him coming back because he's probably not going to get a ton of draft intake that he wants to hear. Plus, I think he loves the stage, the college football stage.
Yeah,
I think he might. You have to love it if you're gonna if you're considering coming back for a sixth year.
I don't think he minds it. I honestly think he might come back. I think you saw what happened with Lamar Jackson with wanting to change positions. He's going to get that. They're going to make him change positions. And I don't know if he's ready to play running back, or I don't know if he wants to really play slot receiver right now.
I
think he may come back and work on, because you think about it, if he comes back, Lashley comes back, he gets another year in this offense, and he fine-tunes the quarterback position a little bit more, not to mention Trevor Lawrence is probably gone, Justin Fields is probably gone. So you're talking about a guy that's probably possibly a Heisman favorite coming into next year, going into next year. He has an opportunity to better his draft status if he comes back.
Yeah, I feel like his draft stock will be a very unique commodity. Because we're seeing guys like Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson kind of change the perception of what an NFL quarterback can be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of factors that will go into if De'Aaron King can get drafted as a QB and if he gets drafted high in particular. One, I mean, the first and most important will obviously be his performance. I've actually, in the last two games, like, I'm not seeing somebody who's going to go second round, you know, and I honestly think that if King goes to the NFL as a QB, he'll probably be a high pick. I don't see him being like a sixth round draft pick as a quarterback.
I don't know, guys. I think he's day three at best.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even Jalen Hurts, who had, what, 3 years of starting experience with two different programs, national title winning quarterback, even he was being told to change positions. Even a lot of people scratched their heads when he got drafted by Philly.
I just, and
he's, you know, he has the size comparison to De'Aaron King. I just can't see De'Aaron going into the draft circles and saying, you know, and solidifying it this year.
And I'm agreeing with you in saying that, like, I that's why I think he's coming back as well, is because I think he's going to go and they're going to be like, look, dude, you're a fourth round slot receiver at best, you know? Mm-hmm. And then he's going to be like, you know, he's going to have to make that tough decision. And I think for all the reasons you said, you know, if he comes back and has a dynamite year, And, you know, we're still seeing great things in the NFL from guys like Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray and, you know, guys that, I mean, they play an unorthodox style for what we perceive as the NFL quarterback, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if that is still successful, which I anticipate it will be, then De'Aaron King might get some hype, you know what I mean? Especially if he's a Heisman finalist, people will be like, look, you know, it's happening. We're going to take a gamble on him because he's an elite athlete. If he doesn't work out as a quarterback, we can put him somewhere else anyways.
Right. But you're missing the Kyler Murray, but he's got to have the Kyler Murray-like performances.
He's not doing it. He's not doing it right now.
Yeah.
It's hard to – I mean, he can be a Heisman finalist and everything, but, I mean – those NFL GMs, it's hard to overlook 5'8", 5'9", as a quarterback, things like that. I love De'Aaron. I think he's the best thing, one of the best things that's happened to our program in a long time. As far as like the next level goes, I just don't know.
Just knowing the little bit of people that I know in NFL circles, like they're going to look at the Pitt tape more than they're going to look at the Louisville tape.
Yeah.
Because he's already has deficiencies and they're going to see like, oh, okay, well, he's off on throws. These reads are not the best reads he's making. This is why he shouldn't be a quarterback. They're going to look at that more than they're going to look at, you know, him throwing for 300 yards on four touchdowns.
I agree. I got a very negative response from this, but during the Pitt game, you know, I tweeted the one that he had where his ball was tipped at the line and then picked off. You know, I said NFL scouts are going to turn on this game and they're going to turn it off after that throw. So they're going to be like, I knew he was 5'8 coming into this. Like, no thanks.
They're going to look at that. They're going to look at that throw and they're not going to care about. Remember the long throw he made to Pope on the sideline on third down Louisville? They don't care about that throw.
They're going to come into there and be like, he needs to prove to me that his height will not hinder him. Then they'll see that ball get tipped at the line. It gets picked off. And they're like, okay, I'm out, you know?
Yep.
And so hopefully he can fix that next season. Cause I do want him to, you know, he wants to be an NFL quarterback. So I want that for him.
Yeah.
But anyways, let's transition a little to the NFL. Marsh and I are both big NFL fans. We've been doing our NFL gambling picks and it's gone terrible, at least for me.
I'm a Cowboys fan. So I hate the NFL this year. I hate it. I know. Yeah. I know, bro.
Well, I'd like to hear your take on just the NFL landscape as a whole. Like, who do you have as the top teams right now? If you had to give me your three, maybe five best teams in the NFL, I'd love to hear what you think. Sure, yeah.
Oh, man, you made it.
If you got them. It doesn't have to be in order, but if you got it in order, that's even better.
I don't have them in order, but I will say three. I'll give you my five. KC, definitely.
Okay.
Tampa, Seattle, Green Bay, and I'm going to throw Pittsburgh in there.
Okay.
Those are probably my five best teams. Now, those definitely were not the five best teams I had coming into the season.
Yeah.
There was some shuffling around a little bit there. But, you know, there are a few teams that are proving, you know, what I thought in the beginning of the year. Beginning of the year, I thought Seattle was Super Bowl contender, and I was right with that.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson is showing why.
Kansas
City just got stronger. We saw what Tampa Bay is getting ready to do now with Antonio Brown. This is interesting. But, yeah, those are my five best teams right now. The landscape is kind of weird because, of course, this is a weird year. You know, You know, you got a team like the Titans who didn't practice for 2 weeks and they came out and ran over Buffalo. And then you got teams like Dallas who came in with so much hype. Yeah. You know, look how their season is going.
It's Atlanta. Super Bowl expectations. This was going to be the year.
Well, it was the year for Atlanta, too. And it went around.
Yeah. How miserable has it been being a Falcons guy this year?
Here's the thing. While I'm a fan, I've taken the emotion out of the game a long time ago. So wins and losses don't have me punching my television or throwing a beer ball across the room. Like, I don't get pissed off at that. So
I write for the Canes, but I still like, I like to think I have that, you know, like no emotion because I'm a quote unquote journalist, but I can't do it. I can't sit in games and I can't sit in the press box during games. I can't do it, man.
Right. I've taken that out, but definitely this is definitely a weird year, man, because it's just, I did feel that coming into the season, I didn't have Super Bowl expectations because I had some questions on the defensive side of the ball, but I figured the offense would be good enough to get them 10 wins, get a wild card spot, maybe win a game, maybe win two. You never know. Maybe make a small postseason run. But it's just, I honestly can't say I'm surprised by the way the season went. I watched the Dallas game and I said to myself, like, this definitely won't push me over the edge because I saw them blow a 25 point Super Bowl lead. Yeah. So them blowing a lead in week two against Dallas, I'm like, oh, that's been there, done that. They've done
yeah
before. I will say this though, the firing of Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff, well overdue. They should have did it last year, to be honest with you.
But, yeah. Well, that GM Thomas, he's been there for a long time, hasn't he?
Yes, 2008.
Holy cow!
Yeah. He's been with two different head coaches. So, I've gotten questions about, you know, did I see Quinn getting fired, but Dimitroff staying? And I said, when have you ever seen a GM go through three different head coaching tenures?
Yeah, right.
It happens.
Yeah,
so, cool. Tied to the hip, no matter what.
Yeah, well, I have a statement that I'm going to give to you, and I want you to tell me how you feel about it, whether you agree or disagree.
Okay.
And my statement is the Atlanta Falcons, more than any other team in the NFL, should do everything within their power to get Trevor Lawrence.
Disagree.
Okay.
And here's why. Even though the season has gone a certain way it has right now, I think what you saw this past Sunday against Minnesota was a small indictment of that this team may just need some better coaching to get over the hump. I think this is one of the better, this would be one of the better openings in the offseason, because I feel a coach can look at this roster and say, with the right tweaks, I can win now. I don't have to lose for the next 3, 4, 5 years as my team is getting built. I can win right now. I can make the necessary tweaks. I got my quarterback. I got my future Hall of Fame receiver. I got a decent offensive line here. Let me make some tweaks on defense. Let me bring in a very competent defensive coordinator, and we can win 10 games and we can be back in the playoffs next year.
Okay.
So that's why I don't think that is the case. Not to mention, it's going to be ridiculously hard to get rid of Matt Ryan and his contract.
Well, do you want me to give you the counterpoint to that? And this is just my opinion. And obviously, I'm not a Falcons fan, so I'm probably not as plugged in as a guy like you is. So take my opinion at face value.
Okay.
For reasons that you said, I do think I agree in that the right coach could win now. But the Falcons are in a very unique situation in sports. Mm-hmm. Where they have a very competitive roster, mm-hmm. and the ability to get a superstar rookie.
Right.
And so, I mean, they're in the Tim Duncan San Antonio Spurs position right now, in my opinion. And right. So, you know, to me, that's more incentive. It's like, you know, we have the ability to win, but how many years of Matt Ryan do you have realistically? Like 3, maybe 4?
So are you implying that they should tank?
I'm saying bench Matt Ryan right now.
Hell no. Dude, not with the money he's making. Absolutely.
Dude, I mean, hear me out. And that's fine if you disagree. But hear me out. I'm saying you bench Matt Ryan, you get the number one overall pick, you draft Trevor Lawrence. I mean, as you said, it might be hard to get rid of his deal, but you do what you can. You know, maybe you can find a way to do that, even if you have to cut him, and then you can spend some of that money elsewhere. And then with a good coach and Trevor Lawrence and still a roster that's ready to compete, then you have a much better infrastructure moving forward.
Or. Let the season play out.
Yeah.
They're probably going to be top 10 in the draft, maybe top 5, depending on how things shake out. I get a guy like Justin Fields. I have Matt Ryan be my bridge quarterback, kind of sort of like what Aaron Rodgers is doing in Green Bay with Jordan Love, or kind of sort of like what Brett Favre did for him. I'll let Matt Ryan be my bridge quarterback in 2022 when his dead cap is manageable. I'll trade him. That way, I'll give Justin Fields at least 1 year to say, sit tight, kid.
I get that. My problem is I don't like Justin Fields.
Well, I just brought up just a rookie.
I get you.
If Trevor Lawrence, I would consider letting Trevor sit in 2021 because I have so much money invested in Matt Ryan. I can't just have Matt Ryan sit on the sideline and he's making damn near $35 million.
Yeah. I mean,
it's so hard.
My background is I'm an NBA. Like I love the NBA in terms of the cap, you know, salary cap stuff, analytics stats.
Yeah.
And dude, I mean, honestly, my opinion was I thought Sam Hinkie was a genius with Philadelphia. Yeah. And there was some mismanagement in what happened. You know, their draft picks didn't always hit. I actually thought that they should have traded Ben Simmons instead of Jimmy Butler last season.
Simmons right now.
Yeah, like, so they mismanaged it. But I actually think, like, if you're willing to get your hands dirty and you're willing to take your lumps, I guess, the payoff can be huge. And that's kind of my approach going into this thing is like, and, you know, there's a rising sentiment that people are saying, like, it's actually better to draft a quarterback, have a very expensive team around him, and then when the quarterback's ready for an extension, you trade him and draft a new one. That came up when Jared Goff was ready for his extension.
Yes.
And I thought they should have. I thought they should have traded Jared Goff for a top pick and, you know, drafted a young guy and see how that goes. So that's kind of more my orientation. But
here's the thing with that, though. I mean, you guys know that is a significant gamble to say, all right, we're going to just start from scratch. Because you can start from scratch and you can be exactly what the Jets are right now.
Yeah.
For 4 or 5 years, and they're putrid. They're just horrible. you can be what the Dolphins have been for a little while. It's such a significant roll of dice because I think when it comes to people look at it and say, okay, let's just start from scratch and get our guys in, and then let's start over. You're really gambling on the fact that rookie quarterback is going to hit. What if he doesn't?
Yeah, that's true. Although I would say, like, the Jets don't have Julio Jones and Todd Gurley and Calvin Ridley.
They don't.
Yeah.
They don't. But I just feel – I honestly feel a lot more comfortable with bringing in my quarterback,
whoever
he may be, and saying, you know what, I want you to sit tight for a year because it worked for Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. You're right about that, yeah.
Matt Ryan was able to come in and win.
He was.
With a rookie head coach, too.
He was. But David Carr wasn't.
True. Well, I mean, yeah, he was playing with, like, a high school team.
Eli had to sit for a little bit.
Yeah. I think it's risky to put everything on that, like, to start from scratch.
Aaron Rodgers sat for, what, 3 years? 2 years?
Yep. 05, 06, 07.
Like, it's hit or miss, man. Like, I get what you guys are doing because you can definitely go to Joe Burrow route right now. And while the team is not great, Joe Burrow is looking pretty fine right now for a rookie quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I feel like if you go that route and you say, here's the keys to the car, Rook, drive us to where we want to go. And if he doesn't hit that, I think that set you back another 4 or 5 years.
Oh, yeah,
it could.
Absolutely. Because you keep waiting to see, like, you're going to wait, like, another year. Oh, like, this is the year he finally breaks out.
Kind of like what Chicago is doing right now. Like, man, is this the year Is this Trubisky's going to hit? Like, they're kicking the can down the road at some point. At some point, they're going to have to say, all right, you know what? Let's scrap this. It's not going to work. We need to get our guy
in. I get you. You're making great points. I'm more in
your boat, Eric. I think because look at what the Heat have done. I mean, they never really went the tank route, and they're in a position now where they're one of the you know, the future stars of the NBA. So, but in some cases it works, some cases it doesn't. Yeah. I mean,
right. Right. I mean, I get what you're saying too. Like,
That's my thing though, is like, are the Falcons even, do I think that they can win 10 games next year with the right coach? Absolutely. Would I peg them as a preseason Super Bowl contender? No. And that's kind of my gamble, is like,
they don't need to be.
Yeah, you're right. But I'm saying, if you draft Trevor Lawrence, you're able to free up some cap. You know, I know that you said that, you know, it's going to be difficult. But if you were, you can spend that money on defense.
Well, the thing that we're overlooking a little bit, and I think a lot of people are overlooking, that the salary cap may actually be lower next year because of
COVID.
Because of COVID. So you're talking about a team that's already looking to be maybe $30 million over the cap, and it can increase significantly if the cap is lower.
Yeah.
So you're talking about maybe 40, possibly 50 million over the cap. They really can't get rid of players like that, because they can't afford to pay that debt cap on the back end.
Yeah, I got you. Okay, I'll wave the white flag on this one. But I want some team to do it, though. Like, the football nerd in me, I really want a team to do it.
To scrap it and just build from the foundation up?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not even talking like a full rebuild. It's like, we have a championship roster, but let's not sacrifice some of those guys to pay a quarterback a lot of money. You know, because you saw that with Seattle, right? Is they were known for their defense.
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah. One is rookie year.
But then they did it. They ended up paying him. You know, what I'm saying is, I want to see a team like, you know, the Rams just be like, you know what, we're not going to pay Jared Goff. We're going to trade him, and then we're going to draft a rookie. You know, because we had this championship roster, but instead of retaining all of the guys on defense and all of the guys,
who would even be close to doing that this offseason outside of the fact, like, what
Cowboys good with Dak? They don't have to pay Dak.
I don't want to talk about that situation right now.
They're actually a team that I think should do that, is trade Dak for a top five pick, and then go like, hey, you know, I mean, the reality is no one's trading that first pick this year because of Trevor Lawrence. But, you know, I think the Cowboys are a team that are primed for something like that.
So the Jets will bite?
I mean, I don't know if Sam Darnold's worth keeping anyways.
I like Sam Darnold. I think it's more of an Adam Gase issue. Yeah.
I don't hate Sam Darnold, but I'm saying, by no means do I look at Sam Darnold and I'm like, we can't take Trevor Lawrence. Because to me, Sam Darnold is about just as valuable as the day you drafted him. Because he's not a failure, but to me, he hasn't shown that he's like a plus yet.
I also think, like, especially if you look last year, I mean, he had no receivers and he still like put up decent stats. Like, I'm just a Darnold guy. I just think that it's been such a horrendous situation. Like, he had Le'Veon Bell, but it didn't work out. Like, he's getting Sam Darnold's getting screwed, in my opinion.
I think it's the organization. I think it's a toxic atmosphere for Darnold. I think he can prosper, but he's got to get away from Gase and the Jets.
Yeah, I'm like I said, I'm not out on him. I'm not saying like he's a bust, get rid of him, whatever. I'm just saying he has not shown enough for me to not draft Trevor Lawrence.
I feel that.
Yeah, I'd draft both and say, you know, let's just see what happens. Because one of you should pan out, and then I'll just trade the other one in 2 years.
Okay, so Eric, this is my last questions. It's split into three quick questions. Okay. So I need score prediction for tomorrow. I need the season prediction, how you think the Canes are going to finish. And then honest opinion, do you think Manny Diaz is the guy to win in Miami? Hard hitters, man. Hard hitters.
Oh my God. Yeah. score prediction for tomorrow. I don't have a whole lot of concerns about the Virginia team as I did last year.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're is Armstrong playing?
I don't think so.
Or is he officially ruled out, or?
I don't know. I thought they were starting number 36, but I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I think they're going to kind of do the same thing they did last. I don't think Armstrong's playing, but I could be wrong.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, this is a numbers wise, it is a developing offense. I think they're like top 25 or so in offense, or top 30 or something like that. But I still don't have a whole lot of concerns on them on the offensive side of the ball like I did last year with a guy like Bryce Perkins, you know, in the fold. So I think this is going to be, but knowing that you have a guy like Bronco Mendenhall on that sideline, he's always going to make it interesting because of his coaching style. I think it's going to be fairly close early, but I think Miami is eventually going to pull away. I'll say 38-20.
Okay.
38-20. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a tie game or one score game at halftime, but it's just Miami just leans on them in the second half and puts it away.
All right, I can do that. Okay, season prediction.
Man, see, 4-1. They have what? 6 games left. 6, 5 or 6, 7, maybe something like that.
They play 11 total regular season games. So after this, they have 6 left.
Yeah. Not. Oh. The only game that concerns me or scares me is North Carolina. That's the only game. I'm gonna go 10-1.
Cool.
I think they ride it out. I think they ride it out.
All right. Oh, that's risky, man. But I like it. I love the confidence. Okay, so I'm guessing you're a believer in Manny Diaz.
Yes, I am. I'm a believer in Manny Diaz. I'm a believer in him because what I saw from him this offseason, there was a clear opportunity for him to be complacent and just say, let's run it back. These guys had a rough year last year. Let's give Dan Enos another chance. He didn't. And to me, that's something that Mark Richt would have done. But he decided and say, hey, year one, it was ugly. We're not doing that again. So he did not settle on that complacency. He adjusted. And that's one thing I look for in a head coach, no matter if it's college or NFL. If he's able to adjust, that's what football is all about. You can't sit here and ride a system that's obviously not working. If it ain't working, it ain't working. So that's what he did. So I'm a believer in him because of what he did this offseason. There's still some things here and there along the way that he has to get better at. You know, we'll see what this recruiting class looks like. I think this can be the benchmark for something special over the next 3 or 4 years with this program. But yeah, I'm a believer in Manny.
All right. Cool. I love it, man. I love it. Jordan, do you have any more questions?
No. Just thank you so much for coming on, Eric. Thanks for humoring me with the Falcons talk. I know I was twisting your leg a little bit, but.
10-1.
Hey, brother. Yeah, we really, really appreciate it. Sorry we kept you on long, but, you know, you are welcome back on the podcast anytime, man.
Absolutely.
Man. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on here, man. And I love talking football, especially giving me an opportunity to talk about the Canes, man. I'm really enjoying what I'm seeing on the field. And like I said, man, I'm grateful for this opportunity you guys gave me tonight.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. We'll get you on soon again.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Cool. Looking forward to it.
Okay. All right, brother. Thanks,
go man. Canes. Go Canes. All right, man. That was awesome. Eric did a fantastic job. We'll have to get him on again soon.
Yeah. Knows his stuff. Just really easy to talk to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we had him on for 1 hour and 7 minutes. So wow. Might be our longest guest ever.
Yeah. It went by like that.
I know. I mean, that just speaks to how good he did as a guest. So, but Marsh, would you mind answering those 3 questions? You know, just kind of your midseason update, prediction for tomorrow. You know, update your season prediction, and then just if you know how I guess gauge your confidence level in Manny right now.
So tomorrow I am predicting 41-17.
Okay.
for the season, I am going to say I'm stuck between 8-3 and 9-2. I can't decide.
Okay.
I'm going to say 8-3 right now. I'm going to stick with my preseason prediction.
Okay.
And then as far as Manny goes, I believe he's the right man for the job right now. I absolutely love Manny Diaz. I think Eric, just shed so much light on the impact that those offseason moves had. I think that's a big reason why I think Manny is the right guy. That he's willing to do the things that our past coaches haven't. So it may take a little longer than people think, but I do think that he is 100% the right guy.
Okay. So for tomorrow, I'm going 27-13. I think we're going to struggle a little bit on offense, but eventually pull away. So I got a win for us. And then season, I'm going to stick with my preseason, say 9-2. I think we drop either the Virginia Tech or UNC game, but just one of those. Hopefully not both. I agree with you. I mean, we've been Manny guys all season, and to me, like, I feel more confident in Manny right now than I did at the beginning of the season when he had my full confidence. So I guess 101% for right now. Like, he's the right dude.
Yeah. And so let me give a little recruit update, how our recruits are doing tonight. Rashard Smith had 2 touchdowns today. Leonard Taylor had a sack and a forced fumble. Romello Brinson has a touchdown for Miami Northwestern. James Williams had a pick 6. So our boys are balling tonight.
Yeah, I love it.
Unfortunately, Amari Daniels is also balling, and that shocked me, man, that we were not in that final top 2.
Yeah. Yeah, that was shocking. So
I really thought that he was going to come to Miami. That's what a lot of people were talking like. But, the rest, Thad Franklin had a big game tonight, too. So weekend is off to a good start as far as football.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So let's hope the Canes show up tomorrow. I mean, it's another one of those games that's just like we should win this game fairly easily. So if we can just not. if we can not shoot ourselves in the foot, we should be okay. So
absolutely. Kate, is there anything else we got to get through?
No, man, I'm excited to get back to more Blue Mountain State tonight. So what episode are you on,
dude? I watched the first season again and I forgot how funny it really is. That like the first season is so funny. But after that it kind of just, it's not that good.
Oh man, I love the second season. I think
really?
I think
I watched like the first 2 or 3 episodes of the second season. What's that line by Thad at the beginning of the episode where someone sticks a finger up his asshole? He's like, it starts with a shot of him at linebacker and it's at practice and he yells something to the offense. It's like, I'm gonna hit you so hard you're gonna swallow your dick, and then when you shit, it's gonna be your dick or something like that.
Oh, I love it. I just finished season 1 just barely, and it's been 3.5 years since I watched it. So if I remember correctly, the first few seasons with what's the quarterback's name, Radon Randell, the first few episodes with him are kind of rough, but by the end of that season, like, he's hilarious, man. He's so funny.
Yeah, he definitely has a few funny parts. It's a good show. I spoke too soon when I said it wasn't that funny. Like it's like that is hilarious.
Yeah, and dude, I love, so season 3. I'm not gonna give you any spoilers, but I will say that Alex Moran finally gets his shot in season 3. And him and Thad develop a bromance, and that is like can't miss TV.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because, I mean, you saw in season 1 how Thad was like looking after that. Travis something, the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
So Thad almost like worships Alex because he's the starter in season 3. So it's a lot of fun.
I'll keep watching it, man. But yeah. Game tomorrow, it's 8:00 Eastern, and we will be back either Sunday or Monday with the reaction show, and hopefully we are confidently five and one.
Yeah. Hey, let's so I mean, obviously we'll see, but let's really try to do it Sunday, because I would really love to get our guy Petrie on, and he wants to come on, and he's available on Sundays but not Mondays, so.
Perfect. Yeah, let's shoot for Sunday then.
Cool. Sounds good. And Petrie, hey, if you're listening to this, man, we're coming for you.
Yeah, we're coming for you. We're coming for you. And all right, let's get a big win tomorrow and go Canes.
Go Canes.
This has been the Forza Podcast. Remember to like.